The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com, is heard on the We Be Geeks Collective and on sci-fi.radio.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
There are a lot of great podcasts that review Doctor Who episodes in order. The Earth Station Who podcast is not one of them. Just like the Doctor, we never know where or when we'll end up, but we'll have a lot of fun talking about it. From Classic Who to New Series and Big Finish, join the Earth Station Who crew wherever fine podcasts are found. Earth Station Who is a founding member of the ESO Network.
We're the Con Guys, and this is the Con Guy Show, coming to you straight from the nerdy heart of Hollywood, California.
And this is Jim with theconguy.com.
She's been here with theconguy.com.
Katie here, aka the Con Girl.
Zordon did not want five teenagers with attitude.
My name is Derek Sam.
I'm Danae Sam, and that's my brother.
We are your home for news, opinions, and interviews from the world of Comic-Cons and fandoms, your ultimate insiders for all things con.
The samplings, you gotta love that.
I love it. That's the best branding ever. Well, welcome everybody to the Con Guy Show for the week of September 13th, 2021. We are your best friends in the worlds of fandom and Comic-Cons, and if you're watching or listening to the show sometime that is not September 13th, 2021, no worries, because this week is a show, it's kind of what we call an evergreen show. We're just celebrating a very cool fandom, and we've got such a cool guest with us today. My name is Jim Fry. I am your ringleader, I guess you could say, for this descent into madness. Who else do we have with us, Katie?
Hey, everyone. It's Katie. I'm on the top screen this week, which is kind of weird. Normally, I'm down there. But I'm Katie, one of the con girls, you know. I'll get the hang of this at one point, this mirrored thing. One part of the con girls. Happy to and excited to talk Marvel stuff, because we all know that I love Marvel a little bit, so.
Howdy, I'm Danae. I'm the other con girl, and also one of the samblings, if I can kind of point that way. And yeah, I'm so excited. I just had dinner and I drank a huge thing of Coke, and all the sugar and caffeine is hitting right now. So I'm in that perfect spot to do a con guy.
Something that happened today is the Hawkeye trailer dropped. And I am very, very excited about the show, and I have been since they announced it. But did you guys see the trailer?
No.
I didn't. Oh, I was okay. Watching Fantastic Four in all of my free time today.
Okay, well, for those of you who are listening or watching, they dropped the first trailer for Hawkeye. And we already kind of knew that, you know, Hailee Steinfeld's going to be in it and all this different stuff. But they dropped the trailer. And as you can see in that photo, there's like Christmas lights around it. Yeah, it's a Christmas theme. It takes place around Christmas. So what's better than Marvel at Christmas? We haven't had anything Christmas in the MCU at this point, so I'm really excited. Basically, long story short, if you haven't seen the trailer, is Hawkeye has to go on a mission because his past as Ronin, from what I take it, catches up with him. And it shows him saying, I'll be home for Christmas. So it's going to become this whole, he has to deal with some stuff but try to get home to his family at Christmas. And it says, I think it says on the tagline, it says, all the good things come with a bow.
I love it. I love it.
I love it. There's two characters who have a bow, and it's just genius marketing. I'm more stoked about this because I love Christmas time themes.
So the trailer, you're giving it the big thumbs up.
Yeah. And thumbs, you know, or... so far, I mean, I'm sure you guys can agree, if you guys have seen Marvel's TV stuff on Disney Plus, it's all been excellent.
Yeah.
I have my thoughts on, I should say most of them have been excellent. Obviously, I was not a big fan of WandaVision, but it still wasn't bad. It's still not bad.
I thought it was bad, but we've been over this on a lot of other episodes before, yes. So I won't get into it now.
On WandaVision? Yeah, I like Loki. WandaVision. You know what one I've had more difficulty with? Loki.
Oh, Danae loved Loki. She's going to leave.
I just found it a little slow.
Oh, especially that final episode where they talked for half an hour.
No, I haven't gotten to the last. I'm actually only like episode four, I think. So all my family's
can just talk, Jim. Seen it. You know, you're a writer. You write dialogue. You all people should not be upset about talking.
Rules of screenwriting: you don't talk for 30 minutes. Every scene should be 3 to 4 minutes tops.
You're not bothering me.
Oh, yeah, that really. I was not happy with that. All right, it looks like we're back. It looks
Whoa,
like
we're back.
Oh, man.
We just wrapped talking to Hawkeye. So
we were barely hanging on there, guys.
You know, you guys.
Katie was doing great.
It's kind of like
nailing it.
It's like those morning shows when you just got to fill the time. You know, you just kind of keep filling time. And the guest isn't on the show yet. But anyways, let's finish with our introductions. Derek.
Hi. I'm Derek Sams. I'm the other half of the Samblings, or at least the other, the second third of the Samblings here. We have another brother who is not part of this show, but we love him anyway. I'm a contributor to theconguy.com and a regular here on the Con Guy show.
And Derek, if you could introduce for us our a very special guest that you have invited onto the show tonight.
Yeah, sure. So there's a saying out there that, you know, with superheroes, you either die a hero or you live long enough to become the villain. But sometimes a superhero just gets saved and becomes a pastor. So I invited now associate pastor from our church, who was, you know, kind of a teen heartthrob in the 80s.
What are you saying he was?
In the 80s.
Heartthrob in the 80s. Now,
he's not a teenager now, Jim. I think that's what he means. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Man, when they came out and there was a magazine, you know, like there was Tiger Beat and stuff, there was one called Bop. And I'll never forget them putting my picture in Bop on a full page. And I was like, man, I thought I hit the big time, you know?
I definitely know what Bop is. I definitely bought Bop all the time as a kid.
Well, tonight we are talking about the Fantastic Four, but Jay's been in a number of really cool, recognizable things over the years that we might be able to talk about. Oh, there are some examples. There was just recently the 35th anniversary of this movie, The Boy Who Could Fly.
Yeah.
Which is, if you haven't seen, it's available on HBO Max right now, and it is really heartwarming, really touching, also pretty funny, and it's also Fred Savage's film debut, which I was young enough when I saw this movie that Fred Savage was a big kid to me. And it's the first movie where I ever heard the word piss. and it was when I learned that that's a word I shouldn't say. And I still am uncomfortable saying it. Thanks to, you know, comments from my brother and parents as we were watching.
Oh, that's funny.
But what's cool. Okay. Underwood has a lot. When I say Underwood, I'm reading some IMDb intro stuff here. Your film credits. Your film credits include Dancing in September, Valerie Flake, Possums. Other highlights is Billy Graham's Road to Redemption, which I saw. That was really cool. Alan Rudolph's Afterglow, the Roger Corman cult classic Fantastic Four, which we're going to be jumping into tonight, and then Bug and Uncle Buck, which is awesome.
Yeah.
One of everyone's personal favorites, The Boy Who Could Fly, which is, like we said before, celebrating its 35th anniversary. And that's just on the big screen. On the small screen,
Star Trek Voyager. What?
Yeah.
X-Files. He was in X-Files. ER. Yeah. Wyatt Earp. Not quite human. But he was also in Young Indiana Jones Adventures, which is so – he played Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
I played Ernest Hemingway.
When I was looking up
some of your credits, Jay, I saw the Not Quite Human thing and I was like, I know I saw that growing up and I don't remember it fully. And I definitely went to Disney Plus to be like, is it on there? It's not.
I know. I can't figure out why it's not actually. It was at the time, it was one of the Disney Channel's highest rated shows. We did three of them. It was myself and Alan Thicke. I played a robot. Mm-hmm. And as you see with the credits, I got like all these kids with superhuman powers and abilities, the Invisible Kid and Chip the Robot and Boys Who Fly. And I played the Kryptonite Kid in an episode of Superboy. And I played the demon guy in X-Files. And just like all kinds of like weird superhuman-y stuff.
Well, even on Voyager, you were this reclusive genius guy going into all these theories of astrophysics.
Yeah, that was funny too, because in that one, if you remember, it was an episode called The Good Shepherd, and my character did the unthinkable, and I shot and killed an alien life form.
Yeah,
who was and so for weeks afterwards, I had like a four-year-old at the time, my son, and he would just go around telling people, "Daddy shot the alien. Daddy shot the alien. Daddy shot the alien."
But you redeemed yourself in that episode.
Yes, he does. Yeah,
we just watched that just now over dinner. We got to complete our Jay Underwood mini marathon before we go on the podcast.
I'm so sorry. There's a whole lot of B movie action, then, is what you're saying, Derek.
Well, it was Fantastic Four and Voyager to Fly and Voyager. So
there you go.
It was a very entertaining weekend. I will say that.
I guess you could say with some of these things that we're talking about, it's like eclectic might be the word for my career. It was definitely that.
Hey, that's what keeps a career going, though. And the thing that Derek said that made me so excited to have you on the show, he talked about, you were in Fantastic Four, The Boy Who Could Fly, and all these other things, which is cool all by itself. But then he just said, and you just have to meet Jay. He's such a cool guy, Jim. You're going to love him. So, Jay.
He said the same thing about you, my man. So, yeah, it's good. It's good to be on here with you.
I knew you two were enough alike that you probably the best friend you actually
have. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry for you.
And
that is
true.
You show
up wearing, this style shirt that's like Jim's favorite.
Yeah. I already complimented the shirt.
Yeah, right? He did. He gave a thumbs up on the
Jim
shirt.
Jim is wearing a shirt just like that. Yeah.
So, real quick, I do have one question though, Jay, before we're gonna jump over to something else for just a second, and then we're gonna come back to Fantastic Four. But like you've got like 60, close to 70 different things in your professional bio on IMDb. What's something that kind of sticks out? What's a production or two? What are some of your favorites that you've been involved with?
I think probably the ones that you've mentioned, The Boy Who Could Fly was my first leading part. I'd done one other movie before that, and so that was awesome. And the neat, well, there were a lot of neat things about it. I love that I didn't speak. I had 6 words in the whole movie. And then Uncle Buck was one that I will just never forget, because I was a huge John Candy fan, huge John Hughes fan, and so to get to play that kind of part, and that kind of role as well. He was originally written as a punk rocker. And John Hughes, who of course you knew, he just had his finger on what was next, what was happening, what was hip with the young crowd. And by the time we got to shooting the film, they brought me in for rehearsals, and he says, I think the punk stuff is just we got to move on. And he kind of saw this kind of not so much goth, but just kind of like bohemian. I remember he called it, and just kind of artsy, and the beret, and and the tweed stuff and things like that. So that was great for all those reasons. The Fantastic Four, I love talking about, because it's the movie that never came out, and yet I am still talking about it almost 30 years after we made it. Almost 30 years. And people, it's the one that I would go to auditions, and like, the director or producer is looking at your resume, and they're like, "Oh, the Fantastic Four. Everybody knew about it. Everybody heard about it, and they all wanted to talk about it, and they still want to talk about it." And I just went to a Comic-Con in Topeka, Kansas, about a month ago, because we're still going and doing conventions and things, because people, And because it never came out, it's had a life that it probably wouldn't have had if it had come out. So
it's like this, it's a badge of honor to say that you've seen that movie. It is kind of cool because it was never released, but to see it, it was like to know about it even. It's like you're part of the cool club, which is really, really cool. All right. We're going to talk about that in just, by the way, John Hughes, can I just ask you, what was it like working with John Hughes?
John Hughes, I loved. The cool thing was he's got, he had plenty of money to shoot things the way he wanted to shoot things. And so typically what you do is he took so much time filming things. I talked to a friend of mine who played a supporting part in one of his other films, and he said, "Oh man, my contract is like for a week." He said, "I got like 6 weeks out of it because he just takes so long." And sure enough, so you would, same thing. Mine was a 2-week deal. It turned into like a 6-week deal. He would, when he was shooting a scene, you'd always shoot the script. So he'd make sure you got the script in the can, and then he just loved to improvise. And he would always put a fresh magazine on the camera because he didn't want to run out of film. He wasn't using short ends and things like that. And once you shot the scene, he'd just start calling stuff out. "Try this. What if you did this? What if you did this?" You know, he said to me at one point, you know, we're shooting the scene in the picnic area before he does the hatchet thing. And he said, you know, as you look around, just make eye contact with the camera lens, just break the wall. And, you know, just so you had total freedom to try whatever you wanted to try. And he loved it. And it was just playtime. I mean, for an actor, it was playtime. The whole scene in the trunk, I mean, it was like, there were like two lines of dialogue. I mean, it was like, you know, pretty short and sweet. And he said, no, just improvise whatever you want to say, whatever you want to say. I'm like, well, I mean, I probably shouldn't like cuss and swear, whatever you want to say. You just say it, you cut around, we'll do whatever, you know? So, yeah, in fact, it was funny. I remember doing this one take where I'm screaming and hollering at Candy. He opens the trunk and I spit the thing out at him. And then I'm screaming at him, you blah, 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 this and that. And I started, you know, screaming about his weight and how he's this fat guy. You're so fat, blah, 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 you know. After the take, Candy pulled me aside and he goes, and he was a sweetie. I mean, he was just a great guy. And he said, that was a nice take. It was a nice take. We'll probably go a little light on the fat stuff. Okay. So sorry, Mr. Candy. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Ixnay on the at bay. Yeah.
How old were you then?
17, 18.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's
yeah. I mean, it was like you said, because I was a huge fan. You know, I love Breakfast Club and 16 Candles and, you know, all this stuff. And then Candy, of course. And so to get that part, it was like, oh, man.
I tell you what, we don't have like Luke's not with us tonight. He's on a plane. He's my a screenwriting partner. And me, Danae, and Derek are all in a screenwriting group together. We don't have a John Hughes today. There's not somebody who's filled those shoes, that kind of film, that great capture the moment, youth moment films. And I tell you what, if we can get another one of those, that would just be fantastic. Speaking of people who are not with us, we do have to mention that Ben, who is usually on with us, Ben Cleaver, is not with us tonight. He is actually, and I have it right here, he and his wife, they are, here we go. Ben is over at Scum and Villainy. It's a Star Wars themed bar, but they are taking part in an auction for a friend of theirs who is fighting cancer. And we just wanted to say it's also, if you want to click on it in the comment section there, you can click on it and go to, this is a virtual auction for Jessica Mills F Cancer GoFundMe. We know what that is. We don't need to say it. You are invited to the virtual auction to support Jess's fight against cancer. Right now, the event is where all the auction items will be posted and the bids will be handled right now from 7 until 11. Right now during this podcast, you can go in and you can put your bids in for a number of different items at the auction. All winning bids, it closes at 11. All winning bids will be handled through a GoFundMe with proof of donation acting as your receipt. And you will arrange shipping and pickup. It's a lot of cool, nerdy stuff, collectible stuff that, you know, Ben, have you guys seen his office? It's just that kind of stuff. And it's a bunch of cool, nerdy, geeky people coming together to help somebody right now. She is fighting cancer, fighting for her life. So our hopes and prayers are with her. But also, if you have a chance, put some money with her as well to help her fight this. So that is where Ben is at tonight. Yeah. And let me see. We do have one comment. I'm sorry. I'm doing so many things tonight. Oh.
You're doing great, though, Jim.
This is Brad. He just said, it's so cool. He did a shoot with the amazing Robin Lively that starred Jay and Not Quite Human. Brad's one of our best friends here on the show. That's so cool.
Oh, right on. Yeah. Yeah. Robin played my sister.
Yeah.
The Not Quite Humans. Yeah. With Alan Thicke being the dad.
And I can tell you, Brad is a fan of 80s and 90s nostalgia, so you can probably mention any name and he will know what we're talking about. All right, real quick, before we jump into Fantastic Four, we have a couple of updates for Comic-Cons that I just wanted to say real quick.
You want me to do them, Jim? Or
yeah, that would be awesome, Katie, and I will. Okay.
All right.
We have a couple of
I already talked Hawkeye a little bit, so we don't have to talk about that. But as you guys know, I do convention updates, which we haven't been able to do a lot because of 2020 and COVID and the lack thereof. It's mostly been a lot of this is canceled, that is canceled, this is canceled. But things have started to happen again, which is lovely for us, being that that is our bread and butter. So I'm going to give you guys some quick con updates that happened. MegaCon Orlando had tons of last minute cancellations, as did Dragon Con that happened this last weekend, or last weekend, which, you know, is kind of to be expected. You know, people are still a little bit unsure of whether or not they feel safe going to these events. So it's kind of unexpected, and I'm sure it will continue to happen until things kind of take a turn for, you know, safer, even if it is in the long term. But that is a picture of friend of the con guy, Tom, at Dragon Con, right, Jim?
Yes, correct.
Shazam panel?
Yep.
But yeah, apparently Tom got to facilitate the Shazam panel film, sequel film panel with Cooper Andrews, DJ Katrona, Zachary Levi, and Jack Dylan Grazer, Victor Vasquez, and Freddie Freeman for Shazam 2. So way to go, Tom. That is awesome. And I am low-key super jealous. So, yeah, you guys can still check out stuff from Dragon Con. I'm sure all the updates are up on the internet now. There's another Comic-Con coming up shortly. It's coming up next month. It is New York Comic-Con. As you guys know, New York is a massive con that none of us, I don't think, have ever had the chance to go to, but I do want to go someday. But it is coming up October 7th through 10th. You can still get tickets. And the tickets range from $60 to an entire 4-day ticket, which is a digital ticket, which is $20. So if you don't feel safe going to the actual convention, you can just do the digital option, which I kind of like that idea anyway, because then if you like also can't travel, you know, you have an option.
I think that's cool.
Mm-hmm. I kind of would like to see some sort of digital option in a post-COVID world for conventions, because it's like sometimes we can't get the time off. Sometimes we can want to go to the convention, we have the time. We don't have the money for the airfare and the hotel and the parking and the food. So I like that. I think that's a great idea. You can also do a 4-day digital add-on ticket. So you purchase at least one live event badge required, which is $15. If you're purchasing after September 12th, which is now, please bring your email confirmation to will call counters on site at the Javits Center to pick up your official badge. Bring a printed copy of your receipt. If the will call line gets unusually long, we'll be able to take your printed receipt and they'll give you your badge right in the middle of the line so you can get into the convention faster. That's a great idea, because I know when you go to LA Comic Con and some of the smaller conventions here in LA, you could have your badge, like your registration and your ticket bought, and it could still take you an hour to an hour and a half to get onto the floor because of the will call line and all that. So it is nice that they're doing an option for that. And last but not least, or two more things actually, but number four is, in compliance with California state and local public health guidelines, everyone will be required to provide proof of vaccination or negative COVID test within 72 hours of each day attending the upcoming Comic-Con special edition. In addition to following current healthcare and governmental guidelines, everyone attending Comic-Con special edition will be required to wear an approved face covering regardless of vaccination status. So as you guys know, if you guys are not from California, there is a mask mandate and all this different stuff. So, you know, I understand from their point, they're trying to protect a whole bunch of people. So I totally understand that decision. But just good to keep updated. If you guys are going to a convention in person, definitely make sure you check the COVID clause. And almost every single convention should have it, and tell you exactly what to expect, whether you need a mask, whether you don't need a mask, whether you need to be vaccinated, whether this. Some events, like I know concerts, are requiring this as well. Some of them are doing rapid tests there, but you kind of have to fork out some money if you want to do a rapid test the day of an event, but some of them are doing that as well. But it's just better to be prepared so that you don't get turned away and you don't spend all this money just to not be able to go. But last but not least, in relation to Comic-Con Special Edition, they are doing professional registration. It works a little different than Comic-Con, but they sent out an email today saying that it's for some personal basis, and it's for a certain amount of people. So it does work a little bit different. It's not like, oh, everybody is guaranteed to automatically get a badge like they have for the last few Comic-Cons, because this is a lot more limited event. So you do still have to submit and try to get them in the general professional registration system, which is how it used to be for Comic-Con, but isn't anymore. So stay tuned, and we will give you guys more on special edition as we get closer to the event and they release more, because who knows what's going to happen at this point, and LA Comic-Con coming up as well. So
yep, and I think the professional registration goes, those badges are available Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, the 21st.
It's always when people are at work, like every single time
they do Comic-Con. They try to mitigate the mad rush. And Brad had a couple of other cool things to say. when he was, he talked about Not Quite Human, about Robin and Jay. He also said they played siblings in the film and went to prom together in real life. Is that true?
Okay, who is this Brad? He knows a little bit too much now.
And then one more. And continuing the 6 degrees of Jay, he's also done multiple shoots with the lovely Rebecca Stab that played Susan Storm with him in the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Brad's a celebrity photographer, so he
there you go.
That's his bread and butter right there.
Yeah, it was funny. Robin called me when she was having her senior prom, I think it was, or junior prom, I don't remember which. And she's like, I just want to go with a friend, you know, I just want to go and have fun. And so we did, and it was awesome. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk what we are so excited to talk with you tonight. Fantastic.
Can I ask a question real quick? It's not about Fantastic Four, that's why I want to ask it. I was on your IMDb, Jay, which the con guy can tell you can be sometimes not be a good thing, but it says that you got a Young Artist Award in 2001 for Former Child Star Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh, wow.
Can you tell us more about that? Because I'm intrigued.
Doesn't that sound strange? A Lifetime Achievement Award for a youth in film kind of deal.
For former child.
So here's the way that works. It was called the Youth in Film Awards. I don't know if it still goes on or not. And this friend of mine was a friend of the gal that ran the show, basically. And it got down to the wire. And she calls me up and says, okay, we'd like to give you this award. But first, I got to ask you, can you be there at the award show? And I was like, yeah. Okay, great. You get the award. So it was really all about, can you be there? to accept.
Sounds like
it.
The Golden Globes.
There you go. So yeah, my big moment in the spotlight there was the Youth in Film Awards Lifetime Achievement Award. Very prestigious.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I just saw that, and I'm weird. I like to go onto the IMDb pages for films or actors and just see like the awards and nominations. Cause like sometimes you're like, oh, they got the awards for like, it's the worst thing, or oh, they got the award.
Right.
You know, and so I was just like, I wasn't aware that there, like you said, that there was an award for a lifetime achievement for your former child
youth film days.
Child acting. So,
yeah, in fact, Robin Lively, I'm sure she's been to a number of those and probably won several of them. It was back in my day, I mean, the 80s, it was like the Corey Haims and Corey Feldmans. Yeah. And you know, I mean, it was that crowd. It was, the cast from Goonies and Lucas and, you know, those kinds of things, right? Yeah.
I mean, right. I will say, I think it's deserving because, like, I mean, you had an amazing list of stuff that you accomplished before you were 18. I mean, you said Uncle Buck was, you were like 17. Yeah. And I just wanted to point out, like, I had a friend who texted me while we're live and was like, I'm going to do it. I want to be the next John.
Oh, no.
Ah, she froze.
You've inspired me. So, Jay, you're still doing it. Well done.
That's cool. That's so
that
cool.
Is cool. Yeah.
Did you get it right back? On. Jay, you're still doing a great job. Well done. That was the cap on the end of that. I don't know where I got cut off. Sorry, guys.
It's okay.
You said John,
and then it froze.
Hughes.
We knew Ducks, if I knew you were going to ask me about it, I would have, you know, dug through my boxes and found my award, you know, and, you know, brought it on and showed y'all.
You've got time. So let's talk Fantastic Four. This is this week on Wednesday the 15th. Is the 60th anniversary. Fantastic Four was the first of what we think of as Marvel Comics, the Age of Marvel. It's the first title that set the stage for the Marvel Age of Comics, a revolution in storytelling of superhero fiction. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby created this family that was a superhero family, but they were also like your family, like my family. They argued, they complained, they got on each other's nerves, they argued about who's making breakfast in the morning, and they messed up all the time. No one had seen anything quite like this. Now, even though the Fantastic Four has not experienced the same sort of sales success, that's a lot of S's, the same sort of sales success as other Marvel books in recent decades, like the X-Men, Amazing Spider-Man, they certainly have found the same sort of success in adaptations to movies and television. Even through the years, they have remained one of the most important titles to Marvel in its publishing and its brand. From its origin to its current status, this is the team and the storyline that embodies everything great about Marvel Comics. and Danae is gone. So
sorry.
No, you're fine.
My poster ripped and I had to fix it.
Oh no. So that is and here, and I have one more thing to show you guys here. This is what's cool. So this is how they're celebrating. Marvel Comics is celebrating Fantastic Four in two big ways. This Wednesday, the 15th, their actual on sale date of September 15th, which was their very first on sale date back in 1961, is this Wednesday. They're going to have a big, it's an 80 page issue. Mark Wade and a whole lot of other famous folks are going to be drawing and giving their additions to this book. And if you've been watching Loki on Disney Plus, which Jay said he wasn't quite as into as...
I'm going to finish it, though. I'm going to finish it.
You'll know about Kang. This book is all about Kang, the different four different versions of Kang come at the Fantastic Four at four different periods in their history, trying to defeat them. And then in November, mid-November, the Fantastic Four tribute issue, if you're looking at our screen, it's the one on the right with this the big mole man coming out of the ground attacking the Fantastic Four. And what that is, this is a page-by-page retelling of the very first comic book that was the Fantastic Four. And it's being reinterpreted but for modern audiences. So that is what Marvel is doing. But there's also something else that is interesting about the history of the Fantastic Four. First, let's talk about this. Fox. Fox has had a long history with the Fantastic Four. Hi, how you doing over there, Danae? So this is perhaps, for many people,
the Fantastic Five.
Yeah, this is their first introduction to the Fantastic Four. And then there's this. Josh Trank's.
I did not even see that one.
You're probably better off for not having seen it from what I understand.
Did anybody see that one?
But of course, we are here tonight to talk about this film, 1994. Yes. This is the original Fantastic Four from executive producer Roger Corman. And I tell you what, guys, let's have at it. I want to hear all about this, Jay. This is something that is so cool that we get to talk to you about the Fantastic Four, this thing that people have very little knowledge of. And doing the research tonight, I saw all kinds of articles. You and the cast, you've appeared at different spots. You've been featured on the covers of magazines. Something about this movie, which hardly anybody had seen way back in the day, has steamrolled into this giant colossus of, I don't know, of something that everybody kind of knows about. How did that happen?
It's more than famous. It's infamous.
Yeah, exactly.
Notorious.
Well, and as I was saying earlier, it's one of those things that I'm pretty convinced that it's had a life that it probably wouldn't have had if it had actually come out. You know, yeah, I don't know. Gosh, where do you want to start? I mean, you know, from what happened with me was my agent called me up. This would have been 1993. And said, I got you an audition for the Fantastic Four. And I said, that's a comic book, right? In other words, I was not like the huge comic, you know, fan. I grew up reading Mad Magazine and I think Archie Comics, but that was like the extent of it. So I go down to the comic shop on one of them on Melrose there and buy up copies of the Fantastic Four so I could get, familiar with it, obviously. And I went in to this audition and I didn't know much about Roger Corman other than, King of B movies and did the audition and got the part and here we go kind of thing. Now, what we did know about it was that because it was Roger Corman, it was this extremely low budget film. And as it turned out, we didn't know what the budget was at the time, but it turns out it was just over $1 million. So it was like $1.2 million, I think, which for Roger Corman movies, that was huge. I mean, he's used to making much smaller budgeted pictures. And so we filmed this movie. We film it fairly quickly. I think it was 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's crazy quick, for maybe it was 6 weeks. I'm losing my memories going here. And we knew that there wasn't going to be the money for all of the effects that it would need. And so I remember gathering Ole Sasson, the director. He gathered the cast together just like a week before we were going to start shooting. And he basically gave us the locker room pep talk, you know, which was to say, hey, gang, you know, we got this tremendous deal here before us that we're all a part of this really history to some regard of making the Fantastic Four. But we know we don't have the money for it. And so we can only control what we can control. And he said, so I'm going to do my best, you know, from a director's standpoint to give it some style and whatnot. And he says, I'm going to look forward to you guys just bringing these characters to life. And he said, let's focus on the story. I mean, let's tell the story in the way that the comic book, you know, was written and pay homage in that way. And so we all agreed. And it was a cool deal where we had this cool cast. Everybody had done a certain amount of work, and but yet everybody just united and just gelled, and nobody complained. It was you know, underground low budget filmmaking kind of stuff where you're not gonna have a chair with your name on it, and you're not gonna have, you know, a nice cushy dressing room and this, that, and the other. But we knew what we were a part of to some degree, and so we all had high hopes. While we were still filming the movie, then word was getting out that it was being made. There was a magazine at the time called Film Threat. And so the fellow that ran the magazine came out and was kind of like our on-set publicity guy and doing interviews and taking pictures. And so at one point then we were on the cover of Film Threat and we were like the whole magazine. And so the comic world started to understand that this movie was being made and would be coming out. They had even given a release date of January 1994, then I think it was. It was supposed to premiere at the Mall of America outside of Minneapolis in Bloomington, I think, Minnesota, and had tie-ins to charities, Ronald McDonald House, this, that, and the other. They were playing trailers in the movie theaters. We had started to go to Comic-Cons. I think we'd gone to an LA Comic-Con and starting to do other appearances. And then I don't remember when it was that I got the call, if it was early January or what, but we all get a call from Ole, the director, and he said, it's gone.
Well,
what are you talking about, Ole?
No.
Said, the movie. It's gone. What do you mean gone? It's shelved. They're canning it. They're nothing. Nothing's happening with it. What are you talking about? He said, I don't know. It's there's some back room deals and you know, trying to figure out pieces of the puzzle, and maybe it was about keeping rights, you know, so that it could be resold and made into a bigger budget. And all I know is it's gone. All of our hard work, labor of love is just gone. And so then began this almost 30-year road trip of what happened to the movie, because people wanted to start having answers because they had done enough publicity with it, enough people knew about it in the comic world that, so what happened? And so magazines started calling and news things and comic, you know, deals and they wanted to know. Oh, there's one that was from Los Angeles Magazine that we did. I don't know how many years ago that was. And there's Roger Corman. That was kind of neat. That was 10 years after the fact.
That's cool.
After we had made the movie, and people were trying to piece together. This is the Film Threat. Awesome. They're trying to piece together what happened. And you get these little pieces of the puzzle and sometimes little chunks. The Los Angeles Magazine was a great one. He probably got the most pieces assembled. And then finally, the kind of cap on it all was about, I don't know, it was like maybe 4 years ago, something like that, 4 or 5 years ago. A fellow named Mark Sykes, who is our casting director and worked for Corman, he decides, you know what, the movie needs to... The comic world needs to know. Everybody needs to know what happened with it. And so we made a documentary that a friend of his, Marty Langford, directed called Doomed. And if you haven't seen it, check it out because it's awesome. Yeah, it's a great title. And because the movie was doomed. And that's the whole point, because was it doomed from the beginning? Was it the movie that was never intended to come out? Or did something happen in the process? And so we make this documentary that puts like just about all the pieces together to say, here is what happened. So that's kind of the nutshell version. Now there's Doomed. Yeah.
that's what I said. And here's a little bit closer up of Doomed.
Secret slide. Yeah.
Conspiracy, betrayal. I know Derek and Danae and Katie, they have a lot of questions, but I do just have to ask you, I was reading about how, you guys kind of pooled some money to do some publicity and you were trying your best to get publicity out. What is it that stopped the movie from being released? Why wasn't it released?
So here's the takeaway is, and we've all talked about this ad nauseum with each other, meaning, you know, the director and all of us is, because that's the other cool thing is, because over the years, so many people still wanted to know about it. Oh, we still get invited to cons and we still get invited to, you know, come and make appearances and stuff. And we all genuinely love each other. It's a really neat cast. I've never been this close with any other cast that I've ever worked with for as long as we have. And Rebecca Staub, who your friend Brad had mentioned earlier, she's like our publicist, basically. She's the one that finds all these cool things. And, hey, guys, you want to do this podcast? You want to do that show? You want to make this appearance? And, you know, kind of hooks everybody up. And so here's the gist of it. The gist of it is there's a guy named Bert Eichinger who had a company called New Constantine. He was a German film producer. And he had the rights to the Fantastic Four. And at the time, 1993, his rights were going to expire December 31st of 1993, unless he was, no, I take that back, 1992. 1992 is when we made it, unless he was in production on this film. And so at the time, you have to remember, you had the Supermans, you had what, some of the Batmans had come out.
I forget. Yeah, they came out in 93.
Yeah.
Or 93 or 94, one of those 2 years. Yeah. Some,
yes. Oh, okay. But the comic book Batman movies,
yeah.
What's that?
Sorry, the first, the Michael Keaton Batman was 89.
Yeah. 89.
Oh, 89. That's right.
So these things were coming out, but they weren't proven commodities yet. The comic book movie and Marvel movies were not like a slam dunk deal at this point. And so people weren't clamoring to snap up the rights or I mean, maybe Marvel was looking to get the rights back because somebody else had given them to or sold them to or what have you. Mm-hmm. But in any case, so this guy, Bernd, he goes to Roger Corman and he says, can you make this movie and can you make it quick? This is literally in like the fall of 92 and he needed to be in production and by December 31st. And Roger sent it off to his guys at the studio and they came back and they said, yeah, we can do it. We can do it. And so, well, you know,
Roger Corman was known for that, right?
Totally. Yeah. And I think most of the money was Burnt's. Roger might have put some in on it, but basically, so we made this movie. Now, nobody knew this deal that had really gone on. Well, we knew Burnt was involved in the New Constantine and whatnot. But then what happened was, as the movie then, here's what I believe. We never could interview Burnt, but he's since passed away. But Ole had several conversations with him after the fact, even years later. And what it seems is that Bernd was hoping that he could sell it and make, you know, a much bigger profit on down the line. But he wanted to get into production. Well, the question then became, well, why didn't we just go into production and then the plug get pulled? Just can it, you know? Why go to the expense of $1.2 million and actually finish the movie for all intents and purposes? And I think it was because Bernd figured, well, if things tank and I don't sell the rights or comic book movies don't become a mainstay, then at least I have a finished product and I can still release it and I could probably still get my money back, you know, and maybe make a little bit of a profit. Mm-hmm. So I think he had the finished product, but then he continued to shop it around. And sure enough, Chris Columbus, 20th Century Fox, bit. And they ended up acquiring the movie and made the movie. And I hadn't seen this because I think I saw the first one that they did, but New Constantine was still on the producing side of things. So Bernd was still involved in that bigger budget version. Roger got his payoff. He doesn't care. You know, I mean, he just likes to make his movies and make a paycheck. And so he got his check, but the rest of us got a cheese sandwich, you know, basically.
Oh, geez. What questions do you guys have? because I could go on forever.
I mean, oh, Derek, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it feels like you just get Jay talking and he'll tell all the stories you want to hear anyway.
Yeah,
and
no problem.
That kind of guest. It's easy to get to get you going. Yeah, do you have any fun stories just from on set, what that was like? Because it sounds like you and the other actors have been pretty close. And from watching the movie, it did seem like all of the actors involved still showed up and did their jobs.
Here's the thing. Again, we took it totally seriously, right? In the sense that, again, we knew what we were up against. There was never going to be the money for the effects. So we really cared about the characters and trying to get the heart of the characters, trying to get the heart of the story. You know, frankly, not just trying to, you know, puff ourselves up, but one of the comments that has been most gratifying from a number of comic fans is that so far, your guys is the closest to the comic, you know, in terms of storyline, in terms of even characters we even justified things like, you know, people would laugh and say, you know, when they watch our movie and once it started getting out and was bootlegged and stuff like that, they're like, well, look at the costumes. Everything's kind of cheeseball. And like the numbers, you know, are kind of the belt comes up over the numbers sometimes. And Rebecca's like, yes, but in the comic, she made the costumes. She made their clothes, you know, so that wouldn't have been, you know, necessarily perfect, yep. You know, and these kinds of things. And so we, like I said, we worked hard to do the very best that we could. Some of the stories, I think any other cast that didn't gel as well, it would have been a horrible shoot because Roger Corman shoots no frills. I mean, we all joke and laugh. He used to have a Venice soundstage. I think it's since burned down. Probably somebody lit it on fire because that's about all that it was good for. And you show up to this place. It was this nondescript, just rickety, worn out warehouse. And you pull in and you walk through and it's like you share your dressing room with the rats and the cockroaches and the ants, basically. And I mean, literally, they had cats that they let run around the studio just to keep the mice problem down. And so, you know, I mean, you're in your dressing room and it's like, you know, there's stains on the carpet. It's just like, you know, so, and then, you know, when we started seeing some of the effects and things and like the spacesuits we wear, you know, they've probably been used on 5 other Roger Corman films, all the sets, he recycles his sets, you know? So it really was one of those things where it had to be this labor of love to just to get through the shoot kind of thing. And I think what we ended up with, I often compare it. It's camp. It's campy. It's okay. Fun in that way. It, to me, it's more reminiscent of the old Batman TV series, you know, pow and zap and whop and, you know, Dutch camera angles and Oli doing what he can do to make the most of it kind of thing. But the one, I think the coolest effect that we did have and that most people have agreed on is our Thing costume was pretty outstanding, especially for the money that we had.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty expressive and really was, you know, it had good servos in the mouth and it was pretty impressive. I think that was the best out of all the effects.
And this was the first on-screen time, the first time we got to see Dr. Doom.
There's Dr. Doom, Joseph Cole. Yeah.
which many people have called the best supervillain of all time.
Yeah, so. Here's Joseph. Joseph has this really – oh, go ahead, Katie.
Well, I was just going to say when you were talking about, like, the costumes, I'm a costumer, so that
– okay.
And, you know, I realize Jay doesn't know that, so, you know, anyway. But I'm a customer, and, you know, as a customer in the industry, you're always supposed to make things look clean, pristine, perfect. And, yeah, I get the point of, like, why we do that. But as a customer, I can appreciate, like, this looks like it's functional. Like, if you're moving in these superhero suits, the ones on camera, you could not actually fight in. Like, most of the movie-level ones, you can't fight in. Yep. So if I saw a costume where it's, like, they can actually move around in that. There would have some sort of charm to it. I would appreciate that as they went for functionality, not necessarily the look of it.
And there you go.
That little like imperfectly perfect type thing has some kind of charm a little bit that I feel like kind of gets lost in these big productions. I'm not talking like throwing shade at all with the perfectness of costumes, but you can also appreciate the other ones too.
Yeah. So. Good. No, I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Iron Man. There's no way in the world somebody can move around in that suit. It right. had to be CGI'd onto Robert Downey Jr. There's a cosplayer who demonstrated how he put on his cosplay suit. I saw it online today. It took him like 15 to 20 minutes just to put a suit on, and then he could barely walk around. So
right.
I got to ask you, Jay, did you ever – so you met Roger Corman?
Yeah, Roger, sure.
What was he like? I mean, yeah, that's right. There's a picture.
He wasn't like hanging out on the set. So I think I'm trying to think if I met him during the shoot at all. Maybe when I did like my audition. I don't even know if
plus he's here with you guys. Yeah.
But when he was there, he's pretty low key. I mean, he's pretty low key. And I found him to be just kind of quiet and, you know, just kind of jovial and pleasant, that kind of thing. And I mean, I don't know. He's a bit of a, you know, shark in terms of a businessman, I think, and all that. But yeah, no, I didn't. I think nobody had any real problems with Roger, even after the fact. You kind of couldn't blame him, kind of thing. You know, I mean, it's business, right? It's just business to him. Right. So he didn't have any, you know, I think there was a certain genuineness, maybe, that he felt a little bad. But again, he's like, but I cashed the check, you know.
Did you ever feel like, because you've been in a lot of productions. Did this one feel different? Like, did it feel like everything else? I mean, did it feel like there was a struggle going on? Did it feel like things were being cut back? Or was there anything strange? Or did it?
No, there wasn't back? because of the low budget nature that we were getting what we expected. There right. was never any let on about anything going awry or amiss. In fact, looking back, it wasn't until Oli, and he tells this in the documentary we did, Doomed. He talks about how all of a sudden they're in the editing process and there's no more money, first of all. So they needed music still. He hadn't like color corrected the thing and done some of the final stuff. They were still working on the effects. And they said, no more money. Well, what do you mean? We got to finish the film, right? You got to finish the film. And so Oli started pulling out of his own pocket. And in fact, the music actually is one of the pluses too. And he got this like, you know, 30-piece orchestra and a guy who composed it. And they actually, I think they did it down at the Capitol Records deal in Hollywood there. And did some really good music. He was working hard to get some of the effects finished up. And then it got to a point where just nothing from Roger Corman's end. There just wasn't money. They weren't doing anything with it. And then finally, they got locked out of the editing room, basically. They showed up one day, and the movie was gone.
God. It was bizarre to me.
Now, Oli was able to – he had – I forget what kind of a print it's called, but he had a print. He had a print of it and what he had worked on. And so he said, I immediately – took it down to the Alpha Cine lab and had them copy it. And he said, I'm convinced that's probably how the bootlegs ended up. He said, because I'm sure some guy in the lab at 2 a.m, you know, copying this thing is like, oh my word, this is the Fantastic Four.
Well, for real, how did he
get a few copies for himself and friends, you know?
How did it get on YouTube?
Well, then that's what I'm saying. So then somebody started posting it, you know.
Yeah.
So once the bootlegs got made, Oli gave all of us a copy. He made sure he said, you guys deserve a copy of your own movie. And he did what he could to finish things up, you know, in terms of the music and, you know, last this, that, and the other. And then he says, I'm pretty convinced that it got, you know, through the lab making some extra copies maybe. And then it started showing up at conventions, you know, as a VHS kind of deal or whatever. And then YouTube and on down the line.
There's also, though, I'm on Amazon right now. There's the Roger Corman version, the Fantastic Four. There are DVDs floating around there. Somebody has made somewhat some money off of this film.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think as
is this person you?
No, wasn't me. As time went on, then it just became easier to do and more accessible. I mean, it used to be that we wouldn't screen it, you know, for fear of, you know, the copyright stuff and this, that, and the other. And now nobody really cares. You know, I mean, they screen it. We, you know, had a screening of it when I was in Topeka, Kansas, and yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, that's the thing. The thing that, especially from Oli, because for all of us, it was this was a potential stepping stone. You know, it really was. I mean, because again, even if the movie, well, you hope it didn't tank, and we were hoping that the comic world, you know, might take into consideration that, again, the budget it was made on, and we were hoping for a thumbs up kind of thing. Yeah, but it potentially could really affect all of our careers to some degree, and including Oli. And so he felt horrible. I mean, he felt horrible for all of us, and he knew nothing about it. And his whole thing is, as a filmmaker too, why do we make movies? We make movies for them to be seen. Mm-hmm. You know, if people don't go see your movie, you don't really have a movie. He would tell the story in the Dune video, you know, well, yeah, I tell people, yeah, well, I have this movie. Well, great. Can I see it? Well, no, you can't see it. Well, then you don't have a movie, you know? Right. And I think everybody's still hoping and waiting for just some kind of recognition. I mean, how easy would it be to take the, you know, Roger Corman 1994 version and slap it on any of the DVDs, you know, for any of the current movies as a special feature? But what happened was going back to that Los Angeles Magazine deal, they interviewed Avi Arad, who was at the time the head of Marvel, and he made some
he's had a distribution now.
Oh, is he? Okay. He made some cockamamie, you know, things about, we got it back and we destroyed it. We destroyed the negative, you know. And I even say in the documentary, nobody destroys a negative. I said, what a ding dong, you know. I'll never work for Avi, but it was one of those things where it was like we're the bad kid, we're the you know, the stepchild kind of thing. Just keep that version back in its room. Don't let it out. Don't let anyone see it, you know, because we don't want to spoil everything else. Well, let me ask you, how your movie's been doing, Fox? Seriously.
Exactly. Fantastic. Trope just shot itself in the foot.
So Brad says, yeah, Rebecca still energetically talks about the film and how big it would have been had it been released. She still wants a theatrical release. She's really,
she really is the publicist. Yeah, she is, Brad, totally. What's that, Katie?
I have a question for you, though, Jay. Given that, you know, we have seen other Fantastic Four movies, you know, since then, that by many people are considered not very good. If with the multiverse opening in the MCU, there's a lot of potential for things to happen. And if
if it came down
to it, and the opportunity to be, you know, Johnny came back and you could redo that role now, would you?
Well, let's see. The first time around, I had to dye my hair blonde. This time, they would have to put a wig on me, you know? I couldn't imagine playing Johnny right now. I mean, could I be like his, you know, I don't know. I don't know who I would
play. I mean, if it's a different multiverse, Johnny.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Could look like anything, really.
Oh, sure. You kidding? Yeah.
Katie, absolutely. I agree. Let's start the hashtag bring back JS Johnny in the multiverse. Let's do it.
What's Johnny doing 30 years later? I mean, don't we all want to know?
Yeah.
Is he just smoldering?
I mean, one version of him is busy being Captain America. Why can't another version of him be a pastor?
There you go. Right?
Yeah. We can tie Brad that has one more question. Brad wants to know, how do we convince Jay to join Instagram and Twitter for the 60th anniversary? So many fantastic fans would love to share their love for the film as well as his other films. What do you say, Jay?
Sure, I'm game.
All right.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Hey, listen, this is
going to... Well, go ahead. Wait, hold on, really quick. Let me tell you this, though. Just to return back to the previous movies, and I haven't seen them all. I just know they haven't done the business that Marvel, you know, would expect them to do based on their other properties. So Joseph Culp, who plays Dr. Doom, has a theory, and I think it's right on. He goes, until whoever's making a Marvel, 20th Century, whoever, until they give proper homage to the original and show the original a little bit of respect, then they are under a curse. And the only way the curse will be broken is if they show the original just a little bit of respect. I'm like,
That's a big statement.
There might be something to that.
Especially since they have announced that they are doing the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Kevin Feige announced they're doing a film supposedly 2023, directed by John Watts. So there's a lot riding on it. The first family. Danae, what was your question?
I had kind of a two-part question. I mean, you answered a little bit, Jay, but like, first of all, how did it feel like, you know, in 2000, whatever, when they first brought Fantastic Four back, like, how did it feel watching like other people get to do it? Like, did you feel like a closeness to Chris Evans in that moment at all?
You felt there's a certain, I'll be honest, like you got gypped, you know, you just got gypped. I mean, they just, you know, passed over, just nothing, just kicked you out the door. It was like I said, like the dog getting kicked, you know, and I think that's how we all kind of initially felt, just, you know, to be honest, you know, but then, like I said, I mean, to be here even today, right now with you all and still talking about it. And I love this. I love talking about it. It's almost like, you know, it's a cool thing to be able to say, you know what? I'm not anyone famous. I'm not Chris Evans. I'm not, you know, anything like that, but I was the original.
That's right. And that's awesome. Brad also says Rebecca, Robin, and Mindy Cohn. I love Mindy. Have posted amazing pics working with Jay on Instagram, and maybe even a prop pic.
That's funny you mentioned Mindy Cohn. I mean, that was my era too. She was in The Boy Who Could Fly with us.
Yeah, you
know, she played Natalie on The Facts of Life.
I TV love that. Show. Yeah, that's my era as well. It's my era. And I got to show you what I'm reading right now. Well, let me make this screen a little. So I love the Fantastic Four. This is the Galactus trilogy right here, which is probably. The current director of the of Fantastic Four, Dan Slott, he says that this is the book that introduced him to comics. And then this is the most recent Fantastic Four until this Wednesday when the big 60th anniversary issue comes out. So,
woo-hoo!
And for the record, my dad loved Fantastic Four. It is the comic book series that he used to read, and it's how he got me into comics was the Fantastic Four. So Fantastic Four is special to me. It's a cool thing. And this is such an honor, Jay, to be talking with you tonight. So thank you so much for coming on with us. And people need to know you're not, that wasn't all, you've got a lot of stuff recent that you've been working on as well. So do you want to tell anybody like anything we can expect to see coming out soon or anything that's happened recently?
Really what I do now is, you know, being a pastor, that's my full-time gig. And so I'm pretty well connected with the Masters University here in Los Angeles, which is a Christian university. A friend of mine runs the film department there. And it's cool because he likes to provide the students with, when they're making their films, he likes to provide them with other people, cast and crew, that have been working professionals so that they also get a taste and a feel for what it is to do things on a more professional level. And so, man, I've had a blast. He'll call me up and say, hey, you want to do another student film kind of thing? Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, things like that. And I love passing on just even my craft, acting to the next generation. I love directing theater and especially young people and kids. And like I said, just passing on what I learned and the love that I have for it to others. So I feel blessed that way. I feel blessed to be doing something that I love and feel called to do in terms of pastoring, but then still finding those opportunities to just kind of keep my foot in it. In fact, right now too, we got a thing we started up at our church where we realize there's a ton of industry people. In fact, Derek and Danae, you know, being a part of it, and it's just an industry fellowship group. You know, as we realize that it's a tough can of worms out there, and especially as a Christian at times, and mm-hmm. So how can we encourage each other and help each other along in our careers in Hollywood, you know, whether it's in front of the camera or behind. And so that's kind of a neat thing a door that the Lord's opened up for me to be able to, again, just kind of have my foot in both worlds there.
It's so encouraging that there are good, decent faith people in Hollywood. A lot of people think of Hollywood as just this, for something we said earlier, scum.
Cesspool.
Cesspool of scum and villainy. And it kind of is in some ways. But, you know, I think those of us here on this podcast, and we've talked about it a lot, and Ben says it as well, we all met through church. We're like church folks. That doesn't mean that we're any better than anybody else, that they were pointing fingers at anybody. But I don't know. We just know that we're not the center of the universe, you know, and it's kind of cool. And that we have, it's cool to know that decency still lives in Hollywood. And this has been such a pleasure to talk with you tonight. I had a little one more thing I was going to do, but I'm going to hold off because there's been some speaking about Christians in Hollywood. There's been some controversy erupting over a certain actor in Hollywood that people Brad is going to, he's going to come back. He's in LA in October. He'd love to do a reunion shoot.
That would be cool, Brad.
That would be amazing.
We're going to make that happen, Brad.
We're going to have that happen. That'll be great. But all I'm going to say is this, there's what you just said. So many people get angry online and I actually wrote what I call a fry rant. I was going to like do it on the show tonight, but it just doesn't feel right because there are certain people that are just getting obliterated online in the Twitterverse, which I don't know how much stock we put in the Twitterverse, but I just don't like the way that people are torn down and humiliated and their lives are trying to be canceled because they, oh, I go to church. Oh, I go to this church. And, oh, wait, I didn't attend a political rally that you think I should have attended. Or, oh, you think I voted this way. And I just want to tell people, you know, I could care less. We could care less who you vote for, who you like, what you eat, or almost anything else. But you know what? If you're a good, decent person and you make good movies and you actually, you know, you act like you aren't the center of everyone's universe, you're okay in my book. And I like that. I like decency in actors. I like decency in Hollywood. Jay, you have just been one of the most decent guests we've had on the show in so long. And I just want to encourage everybody to just remember, don't destroy people. Don't try to destroy people out there on Twitter. For one thing, Twitter, really? Twitter? Okay, let's just get over it a little bit. But Jay, thank you so much. I didn't want to get off on that, but it just reminded me, like, let's just be kind to each other. Let's be kind to the fandoms we love and even give a little bit of grace to some of these actors that you think don't always make the right decisions. You know, they're people and they need your encouragement and prayer, just like the rest of us. All right.
And some of the companies though, too, you know, and that's part of the problem is it's coming from the top down where the companies are bringing persecution, you know, the film companies to people, to their cast members, you know, you don't act and talk and behave a certain way. And nowadays they'll fire you.
Yep. Yep. And me and Derek, I think Derek agrees with me. Derek, I don't call, some people are trying to call cancel culture, or they're trying to call it, what is it, accountability culture?
Accountability is what you do with someone you have a personal relationship with, and you go to that person, and the whole point is reconciliation. That's accountability. Cancel culture is where you try and ruin someone's life, and you never want them to have any success in their life ever again because of one thing they did wrong. It is Pharisaism, and it's very wrong. Yeah. Accountability is very different. And accountability culture also recognizes, hey, we're both equal human beings. We've both got flaws. I just want you to know this was probably inappropriate. You handle it in private and you leave that relationship open so that person can come back to you and help you grow too. That's accountability. Cancel culture is not the same thing.
Yeah. But I just love what Jay said tonight about, like, you know, Jay, you haven't said a single negative thing towards another person tonight. Yeah. You've been super positive. And then you end with, you know what? And we've got a cool community of people. They want to come together in the industry. It's a safe space for people of faith to talk about stuff. That's fantastic. And if you guys are going to come against him for that, shame on you. This is great. Hey, Jay, thank you for being on the show tonight.
This is fun, gang. This is fun.
This is so much fun. I can't wait to get to know you a little bit more. Derek and Danae.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll have to go hang out.
You're a good guy. All right, guys, you can follow us at theconguy.com. Check out the show. Please comment, follow, subscribe. We really appreciate everything there. Katie, who was getting sleepy because she was up super late last night at Halloween Horror Nights. Katie, where can people follow you?
You can find me across all social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, the likes, Twitch, at Katie_Christine. Haven't been streaming as much, but I am trying to get better at the streaming again. So if you guys like gaming and you like just seeing people get really angry while watching video games, you can watch my Twitch stream. I also am going to be making a guest appearance on Marvel Movie Talk tomorrow. So if you guys follow my Instagram, you can see the info we're going to be doing. If you guys know, if you were here last week, we did a Shang-Chi show. I will be doing another Shang-Chi podcast tomorrow with my friend Christian, who was on that show with us last week. But tomorrow at 2, I'll post all the information on my social media.
All right. And also next Monday, I think we're doing a special Halloween Horror Nights show. All right. It's going to be fun. Danae, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at DNAYS. And I am a writer and comedian, and I like posting silly things. And once a week, you can find all of us on The Con Guy. And also, Katie and I do post occasionally on The Con Girl. Hopefully, we're going to have a couple more Con Girl exclusive episodes coming up. We have some exciting material that we can't wait to talk about. Katie, I'm going to text you about it. And hopefully, we'll see you guys there.
And this is The Con Girls. Woohoo! Eric.
Hi, I'm Derek. Again, I'm a regular here. You can find me occasionally on Twitter at ConGuyDerek. And before we go, I was just going to point out, if you have not watched The Boy Who Could Fly, it is on HBO Max, and it's a great, it's a moving, wonderful movie. I watched it again last night for the first time since I was probably about 4 years old. And we mentioned earlier how, didn't
make me feel real old.
I was just really young at the time. Jay has played a lot of the oddball outsider, sometimes superhuman characters. And a couple of big themes in The Boy Who Could Fly are how it's important to love people who seem normal and are hard to love. And also, it's about trying really hard to accomplish things that seem impossible, which was really moving for me because I was, with my new foster kids at the time. We just got a couple of little boys who've been through a lot.
Yeah.
And also in the middle of a really busy season with this coding boot camp that I'm doing, and my wife working really hard, and we might be getting these boys' other sibling too. And, it's a difficult time of life. And also, this is a difficult time in the world and in our country. One of the hardest things to do right now, things that seem impossible, are to love people who are not nice to you or who seem like horrible people. But a good lesson we can learn sometimes from the stories we watch, starring Jay, for example, is that it's worth it to try really hard to accomplish that impossible thing, especially if that impossible thing is loving someone that you think is unlovable. So go out and do it.
All right. That's fantastic. And Jay, you have the final word. Anything you want to say in closing or where people can find you or anything?
Flame on.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Thank you, everybody. Also, if you get a chance, check out the Con Kids What If After Show. Right now it's episode 5, the Avengers Zombies episode. And I don't know if you guys saw it. Wow, that's violent. It's just crazy. Heads were coming off. People are being ripped in half. It was the most violent Marvel cartoon I've ever seen. But I do got to say, this has been so much fun, Jay.
I can talk about it.
All right, Jay, can't wait to meet you in person, everybody.
You got it.
All right, see everybody later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Con Guy Show, the official program of theconguy.com. Find us on the Weebie Geeks Collective or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And now on sci-fi.radio, Saturdays at 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific, both AM and PM. That's 9 o'clock Greenwich. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Dr. Geek here with another reminder that the ESO Network is pro-science and pro-vaccine. We urge you to be a superhero and protect yourself, your family, and your fellow geeks around the world. Don't be fooled by the forces of evil and their anti-science misinformation campaign. Consult the latest CDC guidelines, your doctor, and get the COVID vaccine today.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store.